This podcast is an unscripted, unedited conversation about true crime. We take the cases very seriously, but I don't take myself seriously at all, and neither should you. Welcome to Wife of Crime.
So, Russ, there are so many instances in true crime where books and movies are inspired by real life events. But what about the times when these books and movies inspire killers to do horrible things? Well, the case I'm telling you today has a murderer that was actually a true crime fan, and he was inspired by an Agatha Christie novel. This is the murder of Peggy Carr. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Wife of Crime, a true crime podcast where I tell my husband, Russ, true crime stories, and he reacts to them.
So, folks, it's your boy, Russ.
And this is Jess.
That beer is not as cold as I wanted it to be.
Oh, that's a fail.
It's I. Aww. On a scale of 1 to 10, it's I.
Aww.
Like, I just came from the store. So, you know how a freezer is like, you know, 1 to 10 to see how cold it is?
Yeah.
They must have put it on I.
That's such a fail. That sucks when you open a beer and you're like ready for this nice ice cold beer. It's the worst in the summertime when you're ready for an ice cold beer and then you open it and it's like lukewarm. You're like, oh.
And it's a summer ale.
Yeah. Well, we're back for another week. A couple announcements in the beginning. First of all, I got my TikTok back. So that's exciting. So if you haven't checked it out, go check out our TikTok. We'll be posting clips from our show, our episodes. We'll also be posting some, you know, updates for cases and stories for me and some goofy little things, you know. TikTok is fun like that.
Jess was very distraught. She's back, you know, doing the Macarena in the living room, you know, with the kids. She's going to blow out her hip.
Yeah, so we're back there. And then also, we started our YouTube. We put up a video of a clip from our Patreon episode. And you guys should definitely go like and subscribe because we had a lot of fun making that video. We put funny comments on it and everything. So it's pretty good. I'm proud of us.
Hey, we learned how to use Final Cut Pro. The first video, I can't say that we didn't argue, but we're still married.
You know how it is. The married folks understand.
She kept trying to tell me how to use a mouse. Bro.
The married folks get it. Well, this story I have today is really, really crazy, and I'm actually really excited to tell you. So let's get into our patron shout outs and the review of the week so we can get this story going.
All right. So I'm going to start out with review of the week. This week's review of the week, I'm reading from Apple as usual, because you can't leave any anywhere else. I don't know why.
It's true.
They got to get with it.
That's not true, actually. CastBox. You can leave reviews on CastBox. So maybe you should check those once in a while. There's only a couple, though. There's not as many as Apple.
Hey, if you leave a review on CastBox, let us know, and I'll go see if I can find it or something. Hit us up on the gram.
Yeah.
You know, at Wife Crime Pod. So this week's review is from Case Noel. It's 5 stars. It says, he ain't rusty. You know what, Jess? Sometimes Russ is right. I got to give it to his profiling. Also, Russ, please stay styling and profiling in your wonderful Brock's accent for me. This podcast, 10 out of 10.
Aww.
I have one complaint, though.
Aww.
The episodes are too short. I need more Jess and Russ time. I know. Get my ass on Patreon for more. That's on my next to-do list. Give this podcast a listen. Jess and Russ have hilarious banter. Jess, you're a little angel because sometimes I do be slapping Russ through my phone. They aren't fake. They disagree and argue, and they admit when they are wrong. Well, Jess does. You can tell Jess is passionate about true crime, and Russ is passionate about Jess by going along with the podcast. If you like true crime and humor at the expense of the criminal, then give this ish a listen.
Oh, so, I love that.
Thank you, Case.
Case Noel.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right. So that leads into Patreon.
Yes.
So on Patreon, we do extra episodes there. Right now, we probably have like 30 extra episodes over there. We do a lot of stuff. We just put out 3 episodes and full videos of the episodes on a documentary we watched.
Yes, we're going to be putting out the videos of our True Crime and Chills when they're available. Most of them.
Yeah, because sometimes we might forget to push record or like...
We are known as the most unprofessional professional podcast. That's all I'll say.
Like, stuff happens. So, this week's patrons are Paige, Hannah, Crystal, Emily, Brooke, Heather, Samantha, Natalie, Celeste, Harmony.
Celeste.
What's it say?
Celeste. You pronounce it Celeste.
Why does everyone put letters in there that you don't use? Harmony, Roxanne, Maisha, Amanda, Melissa, and Daniel, Madison, Alyssa, Heather, Christine, Tristan, and Elizabeth. So, let's open a fresh one for you guys. Cheers to the new patrons.
Cheers.
Thank you. We really appreciate you guys. You guys helped us grow a lot and
yes.
helped us get this video equipment and
yeah.
encourage us to people actually like this stuff.
I know. People actually want to hear what the hell we have to say. All right. Oh, one more thing I want to say. This week, this will be coming out next week, but this last week, Ashley Flowers put an announcement on Crime Junkie that Britt, her co-host and best friend, most of you know what Crime Junkie is. We've mentioned them a lot in our podcast because they're kind of the OG big true crime podcast that a lot of people know. Russ called them just the tip of true crime podcasts.
Yeah, because it's like when you first get started.
Like, yeah, it's like
just a tip and then
yeah,
you know,
it's our introduction.
You know how that game goes, guys.
Exactly. So Ashley posted a post on her feed that Britt actually ended up in the hospital and now she's had multiple brain surgeries from a brain bleed. So prayers to her. Definitely check out their Instagram. You can write a little message to Britt on the Instagram if you're a fan of their podcast. But definitely well wishes to her. She's doing good. She's stable. But still, it's really sad and unfortunate. She's very young. So I hope she has a speedy recovery. All right. So true crime is an interesting genre. Sometimes controversial, you know, but it's essentially, in many ways, art imitating life, right? Like authors like John Grisham, Agatha Christie, Gillian Flynn, they make novels inspired by real life crimes and real life murders.
I read Agatha Christie and then there were none.
Oh, you did?
The train, when they, I think they were on a train and people were getting killed or something like that.
I've never read any Agatha Christie novels.
Well, obviously you're not as well read as I am.
So, something scary about the true crime genre, though, is that sometimes TV shows, books, or movies in this genre actually can be the things that are used to inspire bad people to do horrendous things. We spoke a long time ago, I don't know if you remember, but it was like a year or so ago, maybe longer, about a Canadian killer named Mark Twitchell. He was inspired by the show Dexter.
Oh, Twitchell, yeah. And that's when I first started realizing that all Canadian people aren't nice.
That's right. We talked about that.
I was like,
that.
Wait, the roads aren't like paved with gold and right. people helping you cross the street?
We talked about that in the episode. It's definitely a reputation in America that Canadians are like the nicest people that ever lived. Especially compared to New Yorkers. So, yeah, a long time ago, we talked about this killer, Mark Twitchell, who was inspired by the show Dexter to commit his crimes. And today, I have another story like that. The killer in this story was a huge true crime fan and was actually inspired by an Agatha Christie novel, not the one you read, but one called Pale Horse, to commit this awful and sad crime. This is the murder of Peggy Carr, aka the Mensa murder.
I never heard of the Pale Horse.
No? Well, are you ready?
Yeah.
I mean, my are you readies are getting very intense lately.
Yeah, you whispered it like,
are you ready?
I wonder if they could hear you say, ready.
They can. Okay. Definitely. Peggy was a 41-year-old single mom raising her three children. She was a wonderful mom, according to her kids. She was incredibly loving and sweet. She worked as a waitress and would often pick up lots of overtime shifts to make sure her three children had everything they needed. Her previous husband wasn't a great dad, wasn't a great husband, so she kind of made up for it for her kids by just being the best mom she possibly could be. Her children were very protective of their mom. It was two boys and a girl, and the two boys especially were very protective of their mom, understandably.
That's good.
So when a man named Pi Carr was his name, when he came into their lives, the boys were understandably apprehensive at first. Why are you smiling?
I was thinking, so is this like her new boyfriend?
Yeah, Pi.
I was thinking of the Jeffersons, the song. Because she finally got a piece of the pie.
She did. Yes, she did. So, you know, the boys were apprehensive at first about their mom being in this relationship with this guy named Pi. But he turned out to be really great. And he actually treated her children really great as well. So they decided eventually, pretty quickly, actually, it was within a year, they decided to get married. And he had children of his own. So they all moved in together to Pi's house in Alturas, Florida. It's kind of a rural area of Florida. They all moved there, and it was five children total, and Peggy and Pi. They became a blended family, and everyone actually got along really great.
Blended family, does that mean he had his own kids?
That's what I just said. Yeah.
I missed that part.
Yeah, he had his own kids, and she had her own kids, so they all moved in together in Alturas, Florida.
Okay.
So after moving in, it's probably a few months later, Pi checks the mail and he sees a really scary note. It was actually typed with a typewriter on a Post-it.
What year was this?
This is the 80s, by the way. This is 1988, I'm pretty sure.
So there weren't computers readily available.
No. Mm-mm.
Typing's annoying. Remember you had to take typing class?
I never took typing class. I'm 4 years younger than you. I had computer class.
Huh.
You're old.
Well, for all the kids out there, we actually had to take typing class, and they would test you to see how fast you could type. And if you made a mistake, you couldn't erase it because the damn thing was in ink.
Yeah, I can't believe you're old enough to have taken typing class.
Yeah, you would sit there. There's other people, too. And then, like, they would teach you in, like, A-S-D-F, A-S-D-F. And you'd have to type with the teacher, and she would, like, say letters, and you'd have to type along with her.
Interesting. Well, this note was typed with a typewriter on a little yellow Post-it. So, you know, it wasn't handwritten. But the note was actually pretty alarming. The note said, Pi Carr, you and your so-called family need to move out of Florida or else you all die. This is no joke. Pi looked at this as a prank. He didn't believe it at all.
I would have been the same way. I would have hit him with an SMD real fast. If you don't know what that is, look that up.
Exactly. He didn't believe it at all. And when I was researching this, I thought Russ would be the same way. The town they lived in, super small town. They only had one neighbor, like one house right across the street. Other than that, there's like not a lot of people around. So he didn't believe it. He was like, you know what? Some kid's probably playing a prank. Maybe one of my kid's friends or something. This is stupid. So he never told Peggy about it. And he just threw it away.
I wonder if I would have told you.
I don't know.
Well, you worry a lot, so maybe not.
Okay. Well, maybe Peggy was like that. After about 6 months of being married, the couple started having more and more issues and arguments. Something was just not right between Peggy and Pi. And Peggy actually...
She's a cheat.
No, Peggy suspected Pi of cheating.
So Pi was giving dessert out all over.
Apparently. So he used to say that he was staying late at work. And Peggy just had a really bad feeling about it. So one day, after using this excuse a few times, Peggy drove by his job and she saw his car and one other car in the parking lot. Turns out the other car was his ex-girlfriend's.
Jess would never fall for I'm staying late at work.
Never.
If it was optional. First My job, of all, it's not optional because she knows I hate working. And I don't care how much money I'm making. I'd rather play Call of Duty for free and ride my bicycle.
Well, I don't believe you would ever cheat on me anyway.
So or stay matter. Late for work if it was optional.
Or stay late for work. She had this bad feeling. She decides to drive by the job. She sees one car and his car. And the car that's in the parking lot next to his car is his ex-girlfriend's car.
I wonder how she knew that.
I don't know.
Because she's a woman.
But definitely. But it turns out her gut feeling was right. He was cheating on her. You know, she confronts him and she says, listen, I love you very much. I want to be with you, but I'm not begging you to love me. If you don't want to be with me, we've only been married 6 months. If you don't want to do this, I'm out. It's fine. Let me know. But I will miss you and I love you, but I'm not dealing with this.
Yeah, she said, I don't want a piece of the pie. I want the whole thing.
Exactly. You're an idiot.
And he's trying to have his cake and eat it too.
I can't. Okay. Enough.
So, what's wrong with dessert?
So Peggy decides to take her kids, go stay in a hotel for a couple days, just to give them some space, okay? And she comes back, and the weekend that she decides to come back, Pie actually goes on a hunting trip. So they're kind of just taking some time away from each other.
Because he wants to make a meat pie.
But before he leaves for this hunting trip, before he leaves... All right, listen. But before...
All right, no more pie jokes.
Yeah, no more pie jokes. So before he leaves for this hunting trip, though, he says, listen, I want you to think about it. I really want to be with you. I'm not going to keep cheating on you. If you can forgive me when I get back from the hunting trip, let's just have a fresh start, okay? So he goes for 2 days and he comes back. While he was away, Peggy is working a couple shifts at the restaurant, but while she's there, she starts to feel really sick. Like a sickness that she's never felt before. She's nauseous, vomiting. She says she comes home to her kids and she tells them, my feet are burning. I have like this burning sensation in my legs and feet. And it's so painful. And it just was getting worse and worse over the course of 2 days. So when Pi comes home on Sunday, Peggy's son, Dwayne, said, look, I really think my mom needs to go to the hospital. Like, she's never like this. She never gets this sick. She's been vomiting. She looks really bad. She can barely even get out of bed. And Pi was like, nah, she's fine. She's probably got the flu. She doesn't need to go to the hospital. Everything's fine. And the boys didn't like that because, like I said, they're very protective over their mom. So at first, they kind of were like, okay, well, let's see how she does.
How old were they?
The boys?
Yeah.
They were teenagers.
Okay.
One of them was a teenager. Jump 'em. And the other one was actually in the Navy.
Oh, you might not even need help. You passed the physical test, which doesn't seem that hard. Don't roast me, people. I could do push-ups. Anyone out there in the military, say, it's a hard thing. We could battle right now. Push-up contest.
Well, she's super sick. And finally, after going back and forth with Pi, the boys were like, no, I'm taking my mom to the hospital. Like, that's enough. And her son, Dwayne, picks her up, puts her in the truck, and drives her to the hospital. So once she's in the ER, they run a bunch of blood work, but everything comes back fine. So they're like, we don't know what's going on with you, but we'll give you some pain meds, and we're discharging you home.
Carbon monoxide.
So she ends up getting these pain meds, going home, but over the course of the next 3 days, she was getting worse and worse. And then it got to the point where her heart rate was all over the place, and she just couldn't even get out of bed. Her blood pressure became unstable, and she was eventually rushed back to the hospital by an ambulance and then admitted to the ICU because her blood pressure was unstable. So doctors were completely baffled by Peggy's illness. And for a really long time, over the next week or so, they had no idea what was going on. They did tons of blood work. They did scans, CAT scans, x-rays, everything came back normal. So they were really baffled by this. So during the first few weeks of her being in the ICU, Peggy lost 30 pounds and she lost all of her hair. All of her hair fell out.
Well, it obviously seems like she's getting poisoned.
Well, she was in constant excruciating pain, complaining nonstop about her hurt feet, her legs hurting, and burning all over her body. Lost all of her hair was...
That fast? Like, how could all your hair fall
out? All of it fell out. She was completely bald in a matter of weeks. So crazy. Suddenly, though, two of her sons became sick. with the same symptoms.
It's poison then.
And doctors finally start thinking outside the box. At this point, both boys were in the hospital as well. They weren't in the ICU. They weren't as bad as their mom, but they were also in the hospital. So they started running all of this obscure blood work, like stuff they never really test for. And they started looking for like environmental factors, chemicals. And sadly, while they were doing all this, Peggy slipped into a coma. And this is before they got their answer. But after Peggy went into this coma, the answer came back. And you're right. They were poisoned.
Hashtag styling and profiling.
They were poisoned with thallium nitrate. So thallium nitrate is actually tasteless, odorless, colorless. And it occurs naturally in the body, like in really small doses. But when it's made synthetically, it's used as rat poisoning.
They gave her rat poisoning.
Well, yeah, but we don't know who.
Well, either the girlfriend or the boyfriend.
Oh, so you think it's either Pi or his ex?
That's the only other people in this story.
Well, sadly, Peggy had 50 times the amount in her system than a human can survive. So there was no antidote that could cure her. Because like a lot of drugs and poisons have antidotes. And you give them that antidote. Like if someone takes an entire bottle of Tylenol to try to kill themselves, there's an antidote for Tylenol that would hook them up to their IV and it reverses the effects of Tylenol. The doctors decide to notify the Polk County Sheriff's Department because this isn't something that just happens. People don't just ingest rat poisoning. And they knew that there was foul play. And someone did this with the intention of killing the family.
Well, so right now, let's backtrack a little bit.
Yeah.
Pi got the note.
Yes.
So who was the note to? Was it to the family or was it addressed to him too?
It was addressed to him. It said, Pi Carr, you and your so-called family need to leave Florida or everyone will die. This is not a joke.
Oh. And then, so it couldn't be him unless he wrote himself the note, but then that wouldn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
So it could be the girlfriend, the ex-girlfriend, but the girlfriend, ex-girlfriend doesn't seem to want him to leave because they're still kind of together.
Mm-hmm. So like him leaving town wouldn't make sense.
So now, what's this lady's name again?
Peggy.
So, did Peggy have an ex-boyfriend or something?
Well, don't worry. You'll find out very soon.
All right.
By now, you know, Peggy is not only in a coma, but in the medical field, when someone has an unstable heart rate or blood pressure, we call them hemodynamically unstable, which is really dangerous because it means that you need medication to get your blood pressure up. Okay. And these pressure medications are called pressors. So she got put on pressors. And sometimes with someone who gets put on pressors, it's really hard to wean them off of pressors. She ends up getting put on these pressors. Now she's in a coma.
Well, it's kind of a pressing issue.
Definitely. And
full of puns today.
Yeah, you are full of puns. Meanwhile, cops start investigating the family. And, you know, her boys, they're doing a little better. Or I'm sorry, the boys, because one of the boys that was sick is Pi's son.
Oh.
Yes. And one of them is her son's.
So now I don't really have a theory.
Well, both are still feeling ill, but not nearly as sick as Peggy. Investigators question the kids and Peggy's children definitely wonder if Pi is involved and behind this. But it would make sense if he was involved because he just cheated after being married for like not even 6 months. He's cheating on her. And according to the boys, you know, he kind of changed. Once they got married, his personality changed a little bit. So automatically her children suspected him of being involved because it's scumbag shit to get married to someone and then cheat on them right away.
But now maybe if you poison someone and you set poison in some food, maybe someone else eats it by mistake too.
That's true. But one thing that, you know, they did talk about was, well, Pi's son was one of the really sick ones. So it's not very likely that he would be the one that did this because why would he poison his own son?
All the roads lead to the ex-girlfriend currently.
But what about the note? You know, we discussed the note. That's really interesting too.
Who wrote the note?
Who wrote the note? That's the big question. Another really crazy thing is that both of the family dogs had suddenly died a couple months earlier. The dogs started losing their hair and vomiting multiple times a day, and both dogs died within a week.
Maybe the house is haunted and they need to move.
It's definitely not haunted.
I thought you believe in ghosts.
Cops then start searching the home, trying to find the source of the poison, because then they're like, okay, maybe it's in their drinking water. Maybe there was some food that they got that they all ate and it was poisoned somehow.
Yeah.
From like the manufacturer or something. They start searching everything.
Yeah, because how do the dogs get poisoned? You would have to think it's in the water, because what is the same food that the dogs eat that the people eat? You know, everyone gives their dogs a scrap here and there.
Yeah.
Biggie Smalls a little more scraps than others if you see him.
Yeah.
He looks like a little white fat hippopotamus polar bear.
He does.
But
he gets a lot of scraps.
Well, I just bought him diet food, so get ready, Biggie.
While they're searching the house, they find a case of Coca-Cola bottles. And this was the 80s, like I said, so these were glass bottles.
Like the Mexican joints.
What do you mean the Mexican joints?
The glass bottles from Mexico. They are like the different Coca-Cola.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So this is the 80s. Back then, they had glass bottles of Coke. And the tops of the glass bottles, like the bottle caps, had scratches all over them. So they sent the remaining bottles of Coke to a lab to test them. And they were riddled with thallium nitrate. But how? How, Sway? How on earth did thallium nitrate get into the Coke?
I have another question.
Hmm.
How did the dogs get any Coca-Cola?
It'll all come together soon. So at this point, Pi obviously is ruled out as a suspect. He's not a suspect anymore. Because they also tested his blood, and even he had small traces of thallium nitrate in his system. So an FBI profiler working with the sheriff's department gets involved and decides to build a psychological profile of the poisoner. The profiler determined the poisoner was white, in their 30s, male, very intelligent, most likely had a lot of knowledge about chemistry because of understanding how chemical compounds work together.
Yeah, because back then you just couldn't go look it up on the internet. This had to be knowledge you've learned.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe from encyclopedia, I don't know.
Yeah, or being smart.
Yeah, you just, back in the day, you just had to ask your friends, and if your friends didn't know, you kind of just didn't know something.
That's true. You had to like go to the library and research it.
Yeah, that's why I'm much smarter than my parents.
So this is a very well planned out crime, and it needed a lot of effort to really execute. So they also said that this person was passive aggressive. Clearly passive.
Obviously, because they're not actively stabbing or shooting.
Exactly. They're sneaky. They're sneaking around, poisoning someone. The profiler also said that this wouldn't have been the first threat. That this isn't somebody that just comes by and does this. And that's where the note comes in.
Good
remember?
Call, Mr. Profiler.
Meanwhile, in the hospital, Peggy is now on life support. She's on a ventilator and continues to be on pressors. So doctors, knowing there's no reversal agent and seeing her status just get worse and worse and worse, and she's becoming more and more unstable, it's time for the doctors and the family to have a goals of care discussion. So a goals of care discussion is when a family member is, you know, on their deathbed and the family has to decide when it's time to take them off life support. The family
That's
knows.
Tough.
Oh, yeah. It's a hard conversation. Very hard conversation to have. I've had these conversations many times. It's very difficult.
Keep me alive forever.
Well, the family knows their mom is not going to wake up. She's lost all her hair. A ventilator is breathing for her. And the medications to keep her vessels from collapsing, they're still going. And she's not able to come off of them, not able to wean off of them. So at the end of this discussion, the family makes an agonizing decision to take her off of life support.
Oof.
So they unhook everything, and after a few minutes, Peggy passes away. Now, Peggy's poisoning case is then reclassified as a homicide.
Murder.
Yes. So police start investigating the people in town because they know that Pi isn't the guy. They know that the kids didn't do it. So They start looking around town, and there's not really a lot of people. It's a really rural area. They decide to go talk to the neighbors across the street. Their names are George and Diana Trapal. So the cop says to George, "Do you know anyone who would want to hurt this family?" And he said, "Well, it's probably because somebody wants them to move out of Florida." Now, obviously, cops were taken back by this because they were like, wait. That's the same thing that was written on the post-it note.
He wants their land.
So did George, the quiet neighbor, have something to do with this?
Wasn't that quiet when he said that mischievous shit?
No, he wasn't. So as investigators looked deeper, they realized that for the last few years, there had actually been tons of issues between Pi Carr and George Trapal. Arguments over music being too loud. He once reported Pi to the city zoning committee because he was building a shed and he didn't have permits for his shed.
Oh, he's one of them.
He's one of them. They had numerous spats over the dogs, the kids, and Peggy was always the one trying to be the peacemaker between George and the family. I'm sure Pi just saw George as like this super annoying neighbor, but George, on the other hand, he didn't see Pi and his family that way. He hated them. But police, even though they were pretty sure that George was involved in this, they didn't have anything to go on as far as a charge because there was no actual physical proof that he did it. It was just they had a feeling because of how he reacted during that questioning.
How'd he get in their Coca-Cola?
Yes, exactly. Let me tell you a little about George. So he was a 38-year-old white man, very similar to the profile. He was very intelligent. He was actually a member of the Mensa Society. And I'd never heard of the Mensa Society before. The Mensa Society is a nonprofit organization for people with incredibly high IQs. You have to be in the 98th percentile of IQs to even be part of this society.
I knew that.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did. They're always sending me these emails and pamphlets. They keep putting on my door. Keep trying to recruit me. Mensa. Leave me alone.
When I was writing my script, I literally knew what you were going to say at that part.
You're just jealous they ain't recruiting you.
They're not.
Nope.
So George told police he knew nothing about chemistry. I know nothing about chemistry. But after doing a background check, they find out that George was actually very knowledgeable about chemistry to the point that he was arrested years earlier and served time for running a meth lab.
Yo, he's Breaking Bad.
He is. And wow. Do you know, you don't know this, but can you guess what the byproduct of methamphetamine is?
The square root of pi.
Thallium nitrate. So how do they prove it? How do they connect George to this crime? A person like that, who is that intelligent and that calculated, definitely thinks that they're smarter than the police. And the police knew this. They knew this type of guy. And the FBI profiler, he pegged him. He knew, you know, this guy thinks he's super smart. He's arrogant. If you try to bring him in now for questioning, he's definitely going to lawyer up quick, and all your intimidation things that you're going to try to do aren't going to work on him.
Well, he felt he was way smarter than them when he said somebody probably wants them to move, because he's like, kind of like, I did it, wink,
yeah.
But what you going to do, because you don't have any proof.
Yeah. Yeah, so you think he kind of knew about that they knew about the post-it?
Yeah, he's like, you dumb rednecks. You probably should have rode your horse here instead of your car.
Well, police knew that he is an arrogant son of a bitch. So they were like, okay, we need to build a case on this guy before we just bring him in and try to intimidate him. Because the intimidation isn't going to work. So, this is my favorite part of the story. They bring in this badass female...
Oh my
undercover.
God.
Wait.
Once you said badass, I knew it was going to be a woman.
Of course.
Because you would never say it about a man like, oh, this was a badass man. Of course. No.
This badass.
She walks in with her high heels. Click, 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 click.
Well, she's a female undercover detective named Susan Gorick. So Susan started out by just surveilling George. She starts casing him. And over the next few months, she's just watching him from afar, trying to like pick up on his routines and figure out if she can figure, like if she can see anything fishy that he's doing that she could pick up on. But nothing was really, he wasn't doing anything inconspicuous. So she starts looking through his trash. Nothing was found in the trash. She was looking for like, you know, receipts, chemical bottles, like anything, but nothing was found. So police told Susan, listen, you need to be careful because homeboy has a photographic memory, okay? He's really smart and he can easily pick up on cars and faces and remember them. So you need to be like really careful when you're surveilling him.
Yeah, us men's are recruits. We easily can do that.
Yeah, okay. So after about 4 months, with the cops not really finding anything to definitively link him to the crime, they decide to send Susan in undercover to meet George and interact with him. So Susan, understandably, was a bit nervous because of the photographic memory thing. She was like, oh, he, you know, I'm going to go meet him, but he might have seen me already. He might know that I've been watching him. So she's a bit nervous.
But what are they sending her in of undercover as?
I'm about to tell you.
Oh, all right.
So
a meth head.
She's very experienced in undercover investigations. So she just took this on. And even though she was nervous, she was like, I'm going to do this. So this is crazy. Remember how I told you that George was in the Mensa Society? Well, George and his wife hosted a murder mystery weekend.
Yo, she's about to drink some rat poison.
They hosted this murder mystery weekend. And it's, have you ever heard of like a murder mystery dinner or a murder mystery event?
It's like the movie Clue, but in real life.
Yeah, you play a character, like you show up, you get a name, you play a character, and then everyone has to find out who the killer is.
Yeah.
So him and his wife hosted this murder mystery weekend, and they were doing it as a fundraiser for the Mensa Society. So
if they were that smart, they wouldn't have to fundraise. They would just have the money. That's why I'm not joining them.
That's probably true. You know, this event was to raise money, and this was Susan's perfect opportunity to claim that she's in the Mensa Society and show up as somebody to be part of this event. Susan transforms herself into this character, and she plays this Texas divorcee named Sherry Gwynn. Okay? I need to take a breath. I'm getting too excited. So the profiler told her that George is socially awkward, okay, which would make sense. His wife is most likely dominant. So he says, you know, you should play into George's ego a little bit because he's probably used to dealing with a very dominant wife. So that's what she does.
No one likes a dominant wife.
So the character Susan developed was a bit of a victim. A lonely woman who just went through a really bad marriage and an ugly divorce. And she's just trying to start in a new place and make some friends. Kind of like a vulnerable soul.
Sitting there like a Southern Belle with her fan.
Yes. So she walks into the murder mystery event and George is sitting right there registering people. And she went up to register. And she's a little nervous, like I said, because she doesn't want George to recognize her. But she's dressed different than she normally does. She did her hair different. She put on makeup, like a little bit heavier makeup. And George doesn't recognize her. And so she's super relieved. So he gives her a name tag that says Roberta Putnam. So now she's got to, this is Susan now, she's got to keep up with her identity as the undercover Lady Sherry, the divorcee, and then also keep up with the identity of the person she's playing at the murder mystery dinner, Roberta Putnam.
Well, she obviously can't join the Mensa Society if she can't remember two names.
Well, she does, and she does a badass job at it, so don't make fun of her. There were about 40 people there. Everyone starts drinking and enjoying the event, and George gets up in front of the crowd, and as an icebreaker, he decides to tell a joke. So he tells this like corny joke about attorneys and he makes fun of attorneys. and then kind of like keeps messing around about them. So it's clear that he doesn't like lawyers. Okay. So Susan uses this as an in. And later on in the night, she walks over to him and starts, you know, striking up a conversation with him. And then eventually during the conversation, she mentions that she's divorcing her ex and her ex was a lawyer.
So she's like, I hate lawyers too. All right. Good job, Susan.
She uses it as a way to connect with him. So then suddenly, during this conversation, there was an announcement. The first murder has been solved. And guess what type of murder it was?
Poison.
A poison.
That boy is poison.
He is ballsy, is what he is. He is arrogant. He's an arrogant fuck.
That's a good way to describe him, arrogant.
So as the weekend came to an end, Susan, aka Sherry, aka Roberta, makes sure that she has one more, like, kind of longer conversation with George. And she decides to talk to his wife, Diana, as well, because she wants to get as much information as possible about the couple. She finds out that the two of them are thinking about selling their home. So when they say this, she uses it as another in. And she says, well, listen, I'm actually here in Florida right now looking for a new home. I'm looking for a fresh start. I'm really looking to buy a house with the money I get from my divorce. Mm. So let me know when you're ready to put your house up because I'd love to look at it. And George invites her to drop by for a visit to look at the house. So she decides to follow up on this, thinking, you know, maybe if she goes to the house and has a look around and starts noticing things, she can find something that can link him and then eventually she could get a search warrant. So she goes to the house, but she doesn't really see anything. She leaves and a couple days go by and then she kind of is like, okay, well, maybe this, you know, this undercover stint is over. I told them all the information I got from this situation, the cops, you know, and that was it. But a few days later, her boss calls her back and says, no, we want you to continue being his friend.
I feel like he's going to catch on and like trap her in the basement like a movie.
Very interesting that you say that. Hmm. So over the course of 12 months, a long time, Susan would use the alias Sherry to appeal to George. She would invite him out to lunch like a few times a month. They would go out to lunch and she would complain about her lawyer ex-husband. And George would try to help her come up with devious ways to get revenge on him. George told Susan that he used to lace, this is crazy, he used to lace Oreo cookies with a hallucinogenic and then go drive around and pick up hitchhikers and give them an Oreo just because he wanted to watch them trip and completely flip out and hallucinate. Like, that's sick.
George, you got any more of them Oreos?
No, but really.
Those sound like some good-ass Oreos.
Yes, but when you...
I don't do drugs, folks. I'm just joking.
But when you drug someone without them knowing, like, that's... You're diabolical. Like, you're trying to control somebody. That's scary. And I'm sure he didn't tell her the whole truth. God knows what happened once these people started hallucinating, what he would do with
them. What's George's last name? I want to see what he looks like.
Trapal. You'll okay. be surprised by the way he looks. Well, you might not, actually. It might be exactly what you're thinking.
Yeah, because one of us are a profiler here.
So over the course of this year-long investigation, they still didn't have anything to connect him to the crime. But George calls Susan, aka Sherry, one day and says, hey, you know, we're finally moving out of our house. And Sherry says, awesome. My lease at my current place is up.
There's too many coincidences for George, who is a smart person. All of a sudden, I'm selling, and all of a sudden, coincidentally, my lease is up. Like, there's too many...
You mean the character she's playing is
too coincidental? Yeah, there's too many coincidences that are very convenient for George. I'd be like...
If you were George, yeah, you wouldn't
believe it. This is fishy.
But he doesn't see it that way. He's convinced.
That's why we kicked him out the Mensa Society.
Whatever.
And he's wearing that orange jumpsuit now.
Sherry says, listen, my lease is up. Would you be interested in me being your tenant until I can buy your house from you. So I'll just, you know, rent the house from you for a few months until we get all the paperwork going, and then I'll buy the house. And he says, actually, me and my wife discussed that already. And that's a great idea. So as soon as Sherry gave him a check for the rent, she showed up. And he had some things left behind, and the house was still dirty. And he was like, oh, you know, I got to get some of my stuff, and like, I got to clean up everything. And she was like, don't even worry about it. Just grab your stuff, and then I'll clean the house for you. So he moves out, takes all of his stuff, and then she calls in everybody. Crime scene investigation, forensics, come in and swab the shit out of this place and try to get as much physical evidence as they can. Trash cans, every nook and cranny, they're swabbing.
Okay? So they're looking for the
residue.
The rat poison. What's it called again?
Thallium nitrate.
Thallium nitrate.
Yeah. So the swabs were taking a really long time to come back. And Susan decides, let me just put a little bit more heat on him. Let me up this ante a little bit and see if I can get anything else out of him. So she asks George to meet her for lunch. And she tells him, look, you neglected to tell me something. These two detectives show up on my doorstep and they are asking me about you.
Ooh.
Saying they need to talk to you about your neighbors. Why didn't you tell me that something happened to your neighbors? And he was like, I don't know. You know, they might, maybe I'm a suspect. Maybe they think I'm involved. My neighbors were poisoned. He told her this, right? And she's like, yeah, they left their business cards. You should really get in touch with them because they're definitely interested in talking to you. This kind of freaked George out and he started acting visibly nervous. So he asks her, why don't you come back to my new house? I'll give you a tour. I'll give you a tour. And he asks it about four times. And Sherry, Susan, aka Sherry, is like, oh, no, this is bad. Like, if I go back to his house, I might never leave.
Wake up dead.
Exactly. So she said, I'm good. I'm not going. I'll maybe another time. And she kind of blows him off. A few days later, Susan gets a call from the FBI that says they found a small bottle in the home under the sink. And in that bottle, it was positive for thallium nitrate. So they got him. And they were able to get a search warrant of his new house. They show up on his doorstep with this search warrant and, you know, he gets put in the police car, taken to the station, and they completely search his home. They find a small set of jeweler's screwdrivers, and the screwdrivers in the box actually match the scratch marks, like the way it looked on top of the Coke bottles. So they realize that this is probably what he used to open the Coke bottles.
I wonder caps. How he got their Coca-Cola bottles.
So I'll tell you that in a second too. They also found a book on how to poison people. Okay. And a ton of chemicals. But the scariest part of all is while searching the house, police found a secret soundproof room that he had just constructed in the back of the garage, and it contained a platform bed with stirrups attached, and he was literally building a torture chamber. There was even a pulley on the roof that was going to be used to probably hang people or like pull people.
Wow.
Isn't that sick?
What's her name was about to be the first victim. He was like, you know what? I got this room set up.
Yep.
Keep poking around, nosy.
Yep. So Susan was at the, during while they were searching the house, she was there and she saw the room and she got lightheaded. Like she got physically ill because she knew that this would have been her fate if she would have come back to his house that day. So she said, like, thank God I said no. So George Trapal was charged with the murder of Peggy Carr and the poisoning of the two boys.
So Pie and the boys survived?
Yes, Pie and the boys survived. Mm-hmm. After 4 hours of deliberation, the jury convicts him to death. He was convicted to death because this is Florida. And you know Florida don't play.
Yeah, that's true.
So All I gotta say is this dude had this genius level IQ, but he was outsmarted by this savvy undercover badass lady, Susan Gorick. Shout out to you. And the family of Peggy Carr finally got justice. It took 18 months of her, you know, doing this undercover stint with him. But finally they got justice and he was put on death row.
How'd he get in the Coca-Cola bottle?
So he did it at his house. And he went to their house when no one was home and snuck in and put the case of Coca-Cola on the countertop.
No one questions where the soda came from?
I'm sure they didn't. Because I'm sure, like, the boys came home and was like, oh, there's Coke here. If you came home and saw a case of beer or a case of Coke or something on the counter, would you think, oh, someone snuck in the house? You'd be like, oh, Jess must have picked this up at the store.
Not really, because you never go to the store.
I'm saying, Russ,
you only do HelloFresh.
You know what I'm saying. Like, you wouldn't question it.
I guess you're right.
Yeah, like, who would question that? Especially in a family of seven. Five kids and two parents.
When he was, like, planning this, he was like, what is something that people can't resist that if I put in their house,
yeah,
they're going to drink it?
Yeah.
And he thought of Coca-Cola.
It's true.
That's a Coca-Cola commercial.
It is.
It's to die for.
Oh, no. Don't say that. I mean, it's true. People can't resist Coca-Cola.
When I have pizza, I love soda.
Yeah. So, sadly, though, Peggy was such a sweet lady. And when you see, I used a lot of sources to research this case. A few podcasts and a couple YouTubes. You know, videos and stuff and online documentation and everything. But there was a particular episode of Murder She Solved, and it's a show about female detectives and stuff like that who solve murders. And there were a lot of interviews with Peggy's kids, and her two sons, man, to this day are still incredibly affected and distraught.
Of course, their mom died.
I know, but it's like the whole time they were crying during the interviews. Like, they took it so hard.
This was
hard.
40 years ago.
Yeah.
Wait, so there's a full show about women that solve murders?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, women, female detectives, female, like, law enforcement.
I didn't know women solve that many murders.
Shut up, Russ.
I thought it was mostly the, like, male cops.
Yeah. You're annoying. You're going to get smacked.
Well, now it's on camera.
I don't care.
I'll report you to someone.
Somebody get him. All right. Well, that's it. That's my case for this week.
That was a pretty good one because, you know, I didn't.
He was caught.
Once he said to the cops, someone wants them to move,
mm-hmm.
You know, I should have, you know, I was really slacking.
What, on the profiling?
Yeah, because, like, a lot of times, who wants you to move? Your neighbors. Like, my neighbors are annoying.
Mm-hmm.
I would want some of them to move. But all that would happen is another annoying neighbor's going to move in their spot. So it doesn't make a difference.
I got this idea for this case, actually, because of the show Fear Thy Neighbor, because we were watching it the other day, and Russ has made it very clear that he just really doesn't like being friends with neighbors.
No, you know why I don't like being friends with neighbors?
Nosy neighbors.
No, I don't want to be friends with a lot of neighbors because sometimes you just want to, like, walk out the house real quick to go get something.
Yeah.
And then you have to talk a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm okay sometimes, but most neighbors are probably the same way. Like, when the time is right and we both feel like talking, it's okay.
Yeah.
But, like, if it's cold and you want to talk, I hate the cold. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's just be on a waving relationship.
A wave.
We wave. I'll give you a strong wave, too. Like, I'll give you one of these. Like, I'll give you, like, the nod, throw my hand up in the air, like, a strong, like, I see you. But
I just don't put that much thought into it. I really don't. I don't put that much thought.
I didn't either. That was, like, 0.5 seconds of thought.
Well, I thought of this case. I found this case because I was looking up, you know, issues between neighbors because of the show Fear Thy Neighbor. I was watching that. And
I don't remember watching that.
You watched it with me, like, one episode.
I probably fell asleep.
Yeah, probably. And I, you know, knowing how you feel about neighbors, I was like, let me look up a case involving neighbors. But in the beginning, I didn't want to tell you it was the neighbor because I wanted to see if you would pick up on it. And you didn't.
You know, even Jordan misses shots.
It's true. Yeah, your profiling skills were lacking today.
All right, folks. So what we haven't brought up in a while is Go check out, get some merch. We got some dope merch at wifeofcrime.com. I should be wearing it on the thing, but instead I wore my Biggie hoodie today.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really dope. We have, you know, some spring stuff that we put out recently. And
the beer and wine Wife of Crime logo is really cool.
It is cool.
And we also have one that says Wife of Crime, it's
I. That's yeah, really cool. I like that one too.
It's kind of funny. Because our show is I on a scale of 1 to 10, you know.
All right, everyone. Well, have a wonderful week. Talk to you guys later.
And go check out all of our other stuff. Go subscribe to YouTube. We need to, if I make these videos, you better watch.
All right. Bye.
Peace.